It is Wednesday, December 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, fighting resumes in the embattled Syrian city of Aleppo. We hear about the impact on the city's civilians.
I could just say that they are keeping those people just to face the moment of death, basically.
We look at the U.S.-China relationship in the wake of controversial comments made by President-elect Donald Trump, and we hear about a new hit single which mixes pop music with rap. It's all ahead. A plan to evacuate civilians and rebels from Aleppo, Syria, was delayed Wednesday, and a ceasefire in the battered city broke down with a resumption of fighting in the last remaining rebel-held areas. A group of government buses arrived early Wednesday to begin the first evacuations from the eastern districts once held by the rebels. The plan called for most of the fleeing opposition fighters to move to Idlib, a city of 165,000 residents, 60 kilometers southwest of Aleppo. Russia blamed opposition fighters for breaking the truce by attacking Syrian government positions. But Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said it was government forces who attacked first. Russia-backed Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, but Turkey supports rebels who want to oust him. Dr. Kuala Sawa is the CEO of the U.S. branch of the relief group Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations. She tells me what she knows about the situation facing the remaining civilians trapped in Aleppo.
I mean, imagine you have about, you know, I know it's between 80 and less than 100,000 people that are trapped now in few kilometers. They're saying between, I think, around 2 kilometers. But so I say a few kilometers, they're trapped in an area that are being heavily bombed at this point. Basically, they're waiting for the moment of death. And there's no swift action that is occurring. And the negotiation was actually choosing a resolution. They came to a resolution between two crimes against humanity, either to, you know, destroy the whole city on the top of the people, and they are in there, or to force evacuate them off the city just to save their lives, but also to force them out of their own homes. And even the second resolution that they came about last night has not been applied.
Do you know, is it clear why the evacuation did not take place? I believe the various countries are accusing the other of being responsible.
Yes, I mean, there have been a lot of accusations. However, I mean, you will definitely hear different reports because, you know, you have different parties involved and every party wants to make sure that they're getting it out in the way they are involved.
Is there any kind of medical treatment left there in Aleppo?
Oh, that's a really tough question. Actually, if there is, it's going to be very scarce. We know that the doctors there are really struggling with the few medical supplies that they have left with them, trying to work in a little bit safer areas. And I heard one of the doctors was saying, of course, I cannot disclose names, that we won't leave until we make sure that the people leave safely. Because if people need us inside here, we want to make sure there's a doctor that could respond to their call. Situation is beyond imagination.
And I'm sure the people left have anything.
Nothing at all. No. I mean, it's total besiege. They have been under total besiege for over 100 days. So if they had any at one point, now it's the situation. You know, what we're hearing right now is basically, you know, the people are trapped in a small, very small area. Imagine you have 100,000 people and a very few kilometers of area with scarce food, probably scarce medications, if there's any left, and no fuel, no electricity, no clean water. I don't know how to describe it, but I could just say that they are keeping those people just to face the moment of death, basically, if it's going to continue like that and they don't find a resolution within the next 24 hours or so.
I don't know what any of the chances would be if any kind of resolution could be found at this point.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, it is very much a lot of political sides are involved, and it's really hard when you have many parties are involved to get a resolution. And really, we as humanitarian actors, we cannot resolve issues like that. It is basically, this is the responsibility of the international community and they need to take action before even it's too late. I mean, it's already too late, but even further to be late to, you know, to keep those people just to die there and no action taken. Our staff were ready last night for evacuation when it was postponed to the morning. They were there with, I know, it was 20 ambulances and cars to evacuate the injured and the wounded and the sick people, to help them to take them to designated, you know, hospitals that, you know, that has been arranged for. And then they were frustrated. Then they postponed it till 9. And they stayed there till almost 1 o'clock, and they left afterwards. So this is what we could do, and we're doing our best. And I hope that the international community will decide to intervene, because it's going to be recorded in history.
Dr. Koala Sawa, the CEO of the U.S. branch of the Relief Group Union of Medical Care and Relief Organizations, and she was speaking about Aleppo, Syria. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, Aleppo is still trending, and as we talked about yesterday, that young girl who was tweeting out along with her mother, kind of cataloging their experience and describing where they were as they were trying to flee. We're seeing a lot of folks in Aleppo using social media to do that now. We're seeing hashtags like hashtag Aleppo exterminated, hashtag save Aleppo, and hashtag Aleppo Holocaust, where people are using these hashtags to try to talk about where they are in the city, where they're going, sending out final messages to friends and family before they flee or face peril, and just to try to bring the world's attention to this through their experiences and their eyes. So it really is connecting a lot of people to those experiences as best they can communicate them as they deal with all of the perils that they face. We also have a very sad anniversary today in the United States. It was 4 years ago that the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, where a number of elementary school students and teachers were killed. So a lot of remembrances for those students that were killed on social media today, and a lot of talk about gun control measures. In the wake of that Sandy Hook shooting, there was a sense that that would be the catalyst for gun control legislation, that it was such a horrific shooting. And 4 years later, a lot of people looking back saying that hasn't happened and expressing a lot of frustration about that. And then finally, ahead of Monday's Electoral College vote, we have a campaign on social media, hashtag inform the electors, part of a campaign to try to brief the Electoral College about Russia's involvement in influencing the election. So people are using that to try to get the word out to electors and hoping that some electors might switch their votes from Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton. I don't know that that's going to happen, but until Monday, people are still holding out hope, especially Hillary supporters, still hoping that she might win.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump will meet with Silicon Valley tech titans. China is building military defense structures on artificial islands. Philippines president admits to personally killing drug dealers. And Afghanistan continues to fume over Russia's outreach to the Taliban. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
University of Arizona doctoral student James Weber loves to run in his bare feet. It was his inspiration to study the mechanics of running. But since it said you've got to walk before you run, Weber has focused his recent research on walking. He incorporates his research into a new study that explores why humans walk heel to toe, while a number of other animal species walk on the balls of their feet. Weber's study suggests that a human's walk boils down to the length of our legs. He explains that since we stand with heels down on the ground, our legs are physically shorter than if we stood on our toes. To become more efficient walkers, we've had to adopt a heel-to-toe style of walking that produces what he calls virtual legs that are longer than actual physical legs. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear about the new hit song, Bad Things. President-elect Donald Trump's suggestion that the United States doesn't necessarily need to be bound by a one-China policy has the Chinese leadership on edge, and some wondering whether a rethink is on the horizon regarding relations with Taiwan. Trump told Fox News Sunday that he doesn't know why the U.S. has to be bound by a one-China policy unless, he said, we make a deal with China having to do with other things, including trade. His comment followed his recent phone call with Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen, a first by any president or president-elect since Washington switched ties to Beijing. I spoke with VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide and asked him about the Chinese reaction to Trump's comments.
Well, they have expressed their strong concern about the comments that he's made. State media has been a little bit more loose in its criticism, talking about his, from their point of view, his inexperience in diplomatic affairs. And really, authorities have been trying to drive home the importance of the One China policy to Beijing. It's the political bedrock of U.S. Sino relations, they say. But apart from that, they really haven't gone too far because he still is president-elect. And they're taking a wait-and-see approach. Obviously, this is something that's really unheard of, the phone call and the comments about One China. These are issues that there are camps in the United States who have concerns about this, but the way that he's brought the issue forward and it's being discussed now is pretty amazing.
Yeah, because looking back, I mean, when President Nixon visited China in 1972, that very historic visit, that sort of really led to the One China policy. And, I guess from Beijing's perspective, they thought that would just continue indefinitely.
Yes, and it's a policy that they use very regularly with all of their diplomatic allies. It's not just the United States. The One China policy, which originally, in its simplest form, was a recognition of the People's Republic of China as the sole government of China. But they've taken it beyond that. From Beijing's point of view, really, it also means that Taiwan is a part of China. And the U.S. acknowledges that China has that position, but it's never, gone so far to embrace it. But whenever China is meeting with its allies around the world, and maybe if there are issues related to Taiwan that have come up in the press or media recently, that you will hear these reiterations of the One China policy. The analysts, though, that I've been speaking with have noted that it is a long time, or it has been a long time, since this policy was given to birth, when it started. And at that time, the governments both in Taiwan and in Beijing, or Taipei in Beijing, they both were authoritarian. But since then, a lot has changed, at least on Taiwan. And the government there, of course, has become democratic. And there are those who point out that this is an agreement that was made decades ago and is something that really needs to be addressed, because the two parties, at least China and Taiwan, they have gone politically in very different directions.
Yeah, Taiwan has certainly changed a lot over the years, and also its economy has developed, as has, of course, mainland China's.
Yes, and with China's growing and expansion of its economy has come newfound power and, an increasing desire to have a larger say in international affairs. And that is something that worries many on Taiwan, because the pressure continues to build to unify with China. China wants that to happen. That is a goal that they regard as their core interest, that Taiwan would unify or reunify with China. On Taiwan, however, that's something that's really people are not interested in. Support for reunification with China is very low, because they've been a practicing democracy for 20 years now, since their first presidential election. But it's an issue that is, as China's power and its military might grows, is something that needs to be resolved before it gets to a point where it could be too difficult to resolve at all without any kind of conflict.
That's VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. A new hit single pairs a pop singer with a rapper. Border Crossing's host Larry London joins me to tell us all about it.
Well, Sarah, today we're dealing with a rap artist who's won quite a few awards from MTV over the years, including Best New Artist, Best Rapper, and Camila Cabello, who is a pop star in her own right with the band Fifth Harmony. She's done another solo single. A year ago, she recorded a song with Shawn Mendes called I Know What You Did Last Summer. But she's back now with this duet with Machine Gun Kelly. The new song is called Bad Things. There have been rumors circulating that Fifth Harmony might be breaking up, and another member of the group is releasing a solo song as well. But the girls in Fifth Harmony, who were discovered on X Factor on TV, maintain that they're not breaking up. Just like One Direction, they may be trying solo stuff along the way, but they have no plan to disband Fifth Harmony. So we've got Machine Gun Kelly, Camila Cabello. The hit is called Bad Things, and it's just arrived in the top 10 on the Billboard charts, so it's worth listening to.
Am I out of my head? Am I out of my mind? If you only knew the bad things I like, don't think that I can't explain it. What can I say? It's complicated. No matter what you say.
Okay, there seem like nowadays there are a lot of combinations of groups getting together and, you know, trying different venues, that kind of thing.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's happened for many, many years that people record duets, but these days you've got mixing genres together. You've got pop and country, you've got EDM and country, which is very different to have, you know, electronic dance music sound mixed with a country artist, but they did it successfully earlier in the year with Lady Antebellum. But now Camila Cabello, Machine Gun Kelly, he's a rapper. She's a pop star with Fifth Harmony. The band is on tour right now. I had a chance to interview both of them last night, and you'll be hearing that on Border Crossings. But I spoke with both of them who were here in D.C. for a big music festival called the Jingle Ball. And Machine Gun Kelly, very excited to have his album out, doing so well. He's a tall guy, and he told me he wants to get into acting. He said he hasn't been the best father. This Christmas, he hopes to be a better father. He's going to make it up to his son. Camila Cabello, meanwhile, she is one of Taylor Swift's Girl Squad members, one of Taylor's best friends. She also was on Time Magazine's list of the top 30 under 30. She's only 19. Made a lot of money this past year with Fifth Harmony, and she's off to do good things because she's very, very talented. Great singer, performer. She suffers from anxiety, though. This past summer when Fifth Harmony were on tour in St. Louis, she ran off the stage.
Oh.
And the band said, oh, she'll be back. She never came back for the rest of the show. And later they explained it as an anxiety attack, panic attack. She suffered those throughout most of her life. So it hit her while she was performing. But I asked her about it last night. She said she's fine. She takes medication to kind of calm things down, and she's doing just fine. So I hope you enjoyed the new song, Sarah, Bad Things. It's their collaboration in the top 10.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's VOA's Larry London, the host of Border Crossings.
Nothing's that bad if it feels good. So you come back like I knew you would. And we're both wild and the night's young. Enjoy my drug, breathe you into my face, numb. Drop it down to that bass drum. I got what you dream about. Nail scratching my back tat. I
And that is the song Bad Things, and that was singer Machine Gun Kelly. Well, from pop music to real estate, four Democratic congressmen are calling for President-elect Donald Trump to divest any stake he holds in the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. before he takes office in January, citing a clause in the lease that forbids any elected official from profiting off the hotel. In a letter sent to the General Services Administration, now that's the government agency that owns the hotel and leases it to Trump, the four Democrats say Trump would violate the lease the minute he's sworn in on Inauguration Day, and asked how the agency plans to address the apparent upcoming contract breach. The issue surrounds a clause in the contract that says no member of Congress or elected official of the government of the United States shall be admitted to any share or part of this lease. The Democrats claim that clause precludes Trump from holding any stake in the hotel, even though he wasn't an elected official when he signed the lease. Some government contracting experts, though, say the wording of the clause, particularly the use of the word admitted, would only keep Trump from acquiring a stake in the hotel after he's sworn in, but wouldn't affect the interest he already owns, rather. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see how this all turns out. Well, that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Afghanistan continues to enjoy extraordinary support from the international community. This support was reinforced at the Warsaw Summit in July, where the United States and its NATO allies and partners agreed to sustain the Resolute Support Mission beyond 2016 and to provide financial support for Afghan security forces through 2020. In October, at the Brussels Conference on Afghanistan, the United States and over 70 other countries pledged to continue development assistance through 2020. Earlier this month, representatives of Afghanistan and 13 other countries in the region met in Amritsar for the 6th annual Heart of Asia Conference. They were joined by over 20 other supporting organizations and countries, including the United States. Speaking for the United States, Acting Special Representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, Laurel Miller, explained that while the support of the international community remains essential, what is just as important is the support and partnership of Afghanistan's neighbors. Establishing enduring security and self-sustaining economic development within Afghanistan requires a common regional effort. By the same token, security and economic progress in Afghanistan will benefit the entire region. The threat of terrorism remains a serious concern in Afghanistan and throughout the region, said Ms. Miller. In the second year since Afghan forces assumed full security responsibility for their country, they have performed admirably in combating a determined enemy, she said. In the coming year, it will be critical for the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces to continue improving their capabilities. It is also essential that the Afghan government continue to strive to create the conditions for a durable peace. An Afghan-led, Afghan-owned peace process is the surest way to end the conflict and bring stability to Afghanistan. The United States strongly supports such a process. We commend the Afghan government for concluding a peace agreement with Hizb-e-Islami and believe that successful implementation of the agreement can send an important message to other militant groups, said Ms. Miller. Ms. Miller also welcomed the Afghan government's recent appointment of new elections commissioners and the successful prosecution of officials for corruption. The security, political stability, and economic prosperity of Afghanistan and the region are inextricably intertwined. That's why the U.S. remains resolute in its support of stronger regional cooperation and economic integration as the way forward for Afghanistan and the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the...